Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week was born with congenital amputation. The author of No Excuses, the true story of a congenital amputee who became a champion in wrestling and in life. He was the 2004 ESPY Award winner, Best Athlete with a Disability. In 2012, he became the first man to ever hike on all fours to reach the roof of Africa, bear crawling to the 19,340-foot summit of Mount Kilimanjaro. His name, Kyle Meaney. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Kyle Meaney, who twice in 2004 and 2012 was the ESPY Award winner, Best Athlete with a Disability, and a most amazing and inspiring young man. Kyle, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about this. I love the message that you guys are sharing.
First, what is congenital amputation?
You know, I honestly don't know that much about it. I found out more about congenital amputation from a story that was written for me in a men's journal many years ago than I actually knew about it in my entire life growing up, which I think is a testament to my parents' attitude to not focus on the disability. But to give people a visual of what my body looks like, then I have normal size torso and all that, and the only thing that's different is my arms end right at where the elbow would be, and my legs end approximately where the knee would be. So my arms are about elbow length, and legs are about knee length. And but to me, it's just the way that I've always known, and so it's things aren't really significantly different from anybody else. It sounds crazy, but things are pretty normal.
Speaking of different, your mom and your dad had a mantra, no excuses, from the time you were an infant. Talk about that mantra.
I think when I was younger, it was something I probably couldn't appreciate as much as I can now. They were the tough love type of parents, which was awesome growing up. But I think sometimes I didn't always appreciate it. I was actually just telling my girlfriend the other day, I remember my mom vividly telling me when I'd be thirsty or complaining about that, she would say, swallow your spit. And that was just the attitude that, we grew up with. And we joke about it, stuff like that. But they expected a lot of me, regardless of the disability, just the same as my three younger sisters and who were all born totally normal. It was just something where they really didn't treat me any different as a consequence of the disability. And I think that helped shape my worldview as it is today.
Kyle, the first time you put a sock on, how long did it take?
The first sock took about 45 minutes. The second sock took about, it took about 30 minutes, and then another 15 minutes for the second sock. So 45 minutes altogether for the first pair of socks.
And what can you put them on now?
I put them on now in about 30 seconds for a pair of socks.
You talk a lot about, and I quote you, the pursuit of normalcy. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that different people can relate to this in different ways, but I think that especially with someone with a disability, that there's kind of a misconception that somebody with a disability, like that, really that it's better to identify with that disability. And, people learn a ton about their disability or, know about it. And it really becomes like an identity of like, this is me. And I believe the polar opposite. I believe that, anyone, because everyone has some type of disability and things that you would never be able to see on the outside. We all have that. Everybody listening to this has a disability. and sometimes not acknowledging what that disability is part of the disability too. But that's a whole other story. I think that the pursuit of normalcy to me was just living a normal life and not allowing the circumstance to dictate what that life would be.
Kyle Maynard, how do you define normal?
Well, you know, I don't know. That's a great question. I think that the pursuit of normalcy and all that like may have evolved now into the pursuit of the extraordinary, the pursuit of excellence, the pursuit of an amazing life. When I was younger, I really just wanted to be normal. And normal to me meant hanging out with other kids and, you know, playing sports and having a good time. To me, normal now may be that, like, you know, striving for a higher achievement, you know, reaching for dreams that extend beyond what I even believe to be possible right now.
At age 12, you know, your arms ended at your elbows, your legs end at your knees, and at age 12, you decide to take up wrestling. Why?
Because I was tricked into it. I was tricked into thinking that it was going to be just like Hulk Hogan jumping off the ropes and figured I would be on TV and be a glamorous sixth grader that was very disillusioned when I came out to the wrestling mat and realized that it was much different than I had imagined.
You lost your first 35 matches over 1.5 years. Why didn't you quit?
I wanted to quit. I really did. I would have quit if it hadn't been for my family. And I think, you know, nowadays, I think a lot of times parents let their kids, you know, out easy. And it's, I think, a lot of times done out of love. You know, they don't want their kids to be uncomfortable. They don't want their kids to continue to go and fail. But sometimes if we don't finish what we start, then we continue to go and, you know, have that pattern of not finishing what we start in all things in our lives. And my mom and dad, they just, you know, that the rule was that I couldn't quit in the middle of the season. So in sixth grade, I lost every match. And in seventh grade, halfway through that year, I'd still lost every match. But they just wouldn't let me quit at the end of this, you know, through that year. If I had lost every match through seventh grade, it, you know, I probably wouldn't have come back out to wrestle again in eighth grade, to be honest. But, you know, the fact was is that, you know, I stuck it out and won that match in seventh grade, and it forever changed my belief system about what it could do.
On the 36th try, you mercied the kid. Tell us about that experience.
I just remember, you know, this lasted for a while, not just in this one match, but in a lot of matches. Like, I remember, you know, initially, like, I would take somebody down and I'd be on top of them. And I think, like, my expression would be even more surprised than the kid was that I took down. So it was an unbelievable feeling that I just, you know, after that, it really started to shape and change my beliefs. And I started winning a significant number of more matches after that.
In 2005, our guest Kyle Maynard was inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. We're talking to Kyle Maynard, and I'm Jack Grasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Grasula, and we're with a most extraordinary human being, Kyle Maynard. Kyle, senior year of high school, you win 36 matches. You become All-State. What did wrestling do for you, Kyle Maynard?
That's a great question. I think that wrestling has shaped my entire life to date. I think that, you know, even though I don't continue to compete as a wrestler anymore, that I think really that it's really changed the way that I look at the world in a lot of circumstances. I mean, people don't realize with wrestling, and maybe they do if they have family members that wrestle or they wrestle themselves, but, you know, there's a lot of suffering that goes into wrestling before you actually get to the match. For me, I had to cut a lot of weight and, you know, and discipline myself and, you know, go through all of that and train hard to, you know, on an empty stomach and dehydrated and tired and, you know, weak, and then go out there and perform at your absolute best. It teaches you, I think, a certain amount of grit and character that maybe other sports lack. And I think that's something I carry with me for the rest of my life. There's a long list of very accomplished people that come from a wrestling background, and I'm convinced it really is like the character building, the grit building side of the sport that makes people so successful later on.
At the same time that you're becoming this all-state wrestler, also you take up weightlifting, and you become GNC's world's strongest teen. When you started, Kyle, you could only lift 2.5 pounds on each arm. Tell us about weightlifting.
Well, my dad had got me into it when before I played football. That was my very first sport that I started out playing, and I played nose guard, so I'm down on all fours, and to give people a visual of what that would look like, you know, my elbows and knees going up against other kids that were much bigger. And so I'd try to take my helmet and smash it into their shins to try to bring them down. And so weightlifting became a thing that we did to try to get stronger and try to remain competitive in wrestling and football. And it started as something where it was just, it was just in the weight room just doing it. And I was doing it with other high school kids. And the thought that went through my head was, I wondered if they were staring at me because I was lifting such light weight. I remember feeling kind of nervous about that at first, but I ended up gradually, I lifted a lot. Started when I was 11 years old, so pretty young, but started with lightweight and good form and gradually kept moving up and up. By the time I got to the GNC World Strongest Teen competition that you mentioned, I was 17 years old and lifted 240 pounds 23 times in one set. And in 2009, had my best ever in a modified bench press and bench pressed 420 pounds. So it was a significant jump from the 5 pound cumulative total that I'd started out with.
You went to University of Georgia, you write a book, you become a motivational speaker, and then late 2011, you decide you want to go to Africa and climb its tallest mountain, Mount Kilimanjaro, 19,340 feet, Why'd you decide to do that?
I think if you had asked me there at the base of Kilimanjaro why I decided to do that, I'd probably tell you that was one of the dumbest ideas I've ever had. Kilimanjaro, it was amazing. It was breathtaking, but there was a tremendous amount that went into the preparation to go into the mountain. One thing I haven't really shared that publicly is that we had, not something I'm ashamed of. I think I'm, pretty proud of this now after the fact. We failed miserably on a ton of training hikes leading up to Kilimanjaro. In many instances, I would have to be carried out by friends on their back just because 400 or 500 meters into a hike, my gear just wasn't working or something would happen and I would, need somebody else's help. With Kilimanjaro, it's a 38-mile trail and way longer than the 3 miles or so that I'd ever traveled before at most. And I did it completely unassisted. So it was a big transition from where we had started. But if it hadn't been for those failures, if it hadn't been for trying different things for gear, from custom shoes, when I say gear, for my arms and my feet, then there's no way that it would have succeeded. It's cool to think that, we were on a trail in North Georgia, would have been in August of 2011. And I only made it 400 meters into this hike, for maybe 500 meters, certainly less than a half a mile before I had to be carried out. And this took almost 2 hours to make it less than a half a mile. And now I can cruise on that same trail and probably make it to the same point in maybe, 20 or so minutes, 20 or 30 minutes tops.
You started on January 6, 2012. It ultimately took you 9 days. You went with a couple of vets and some guides. And at 12,000 feet, the fourth or fifth day into it, you wanted to quit. Why?
I was broken. It was something where, with Kilimanjaro, the thing is the difference between like wrestling and climbing a mountain is that, like, in a wrestling match, like, no matter how bad it is, no matter how bad you're losing, no matter how bad you want it to be over, like, it's going to be over in 6 minutes. And with a mountain, you're on there for a long time. And for me, I just...
Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Kyle Maynard, who was born with four stumps. Kyle, I quote you now. You say, your purpose in life is to show other people their purpose, their potential in their lives. Tell us about that.
Well, I think that it begins by finding my own. And I think that I've yet to find that. And I think that if I continually try to seek my own purpose, to try to seek my own, you know, sense of meaning, sense of self-achievement, sense of, you know, just true north, then I think that that's what will help me in turn try to help other people find theirs. It's, I think, you know, a lot of times people have it figured out of, you know, this is my purpose or that is my purpose. And I think that that's one of the you know, biggest misconceptions that we can go and have is that we really truly know. You know, if we try to go and interject and try to paint a picture there of what it should be, then we sometimes miss out on the beauty of what could be with the empty plate.
You could be related to Nick Vujicic, another phenomenal human being who was born with no limbs. And he says a number of things. Like a couple of them are, one, we all have disabilities, and two, if you take the word disable and put a G and an O in front of disable, you get God is able. What do you think about those two statements, Kyle?
That's pretty cool. The first one is something, a lesson my grandma taught me when I was younger. So I think Nick and I are about the same age, but I don't know if she had any connection to that, but I doubt it. But that's a pretty powerful lesson that we all have disabilities. And I think we even talked about that earlier in the segment. A lot of those disabilities are internal that you would never even really be able to see. I think that those things are the most significant. And that's pretty cool with the play in the word of God is able. It's really, really true. I mean, it's, you know, all you got to do, I'm sitting in San Diego right now. I get to go and look out in the ocean and go and acknowledge that, just that it's, you know, the scope of our difficulties and challenges are minuscule compared to, if you think about the, you know, the universal scale of what we're on here. I mean, for perspective, we're literally sitting on a giant, you know, spaceship moving through space at 66,000 miles per hour with no roof. You know, and if we step outside, it's like, you know, whoa. I mean, like, we're moving through the universe right now at an unbelievable speed, and a minuscule compared to, like, the speed of light and the speed of creation is to what it is. So it's pretty powerful, just like the little speck that we are, but yet, you know, the just the love, too, that we can have and change and, you know, and do in this world.
If there's a listener tonight that says, wow, what a spectacular young man. I'm embarrassed to admit that, Kyle, I'm afraid to try because I'm afraid to fail. What would you tell that listener?
Well, I think any number of achievements, anything, whether it's putting on my socks or lifting 420 pounds or climbing a mountain or standing up on stage in front of a group, like any one of those examples, like, was met with a tremendous amount of failure. So, you know, if we aren't willing to go and try, then we don't want it bad enough, because, you know, you have to be willing to go and fail and say that failing is not a permanent condition. You know, that just because you fail doesn't mean that you can't stand back up and keep going. I mean, it's, you know, even if you think about the absolute worst case scenario of what happens to you, if you go ahead and have a, you know, dream to go and start a business, then, you know, in that worst case scenario, you know, then the business fails and goes belly up and, you know, you lose some money, whatever else. Like, people all the time go broke and they find other investors, start other businesses. They make a lot of money. Maybe they go broke again and they do it all over again. So, I mean, there's really, like, you know, once we examine, like, what's the worst case scenario of things that could happen, and what would it take to go and get back to baseline? What would it take to go and get back to zero? Then, you know, it's really a lot less scary than we sometimes make it out to be.
Kyle, what do you say to a person who's different?
I would say that you're not as different as you think. I'd say that everybody's different, and that people that pretend to not be different are the ones that are significantly more different, because they're living a life of pretense. They're living a life that's inauthentic. Being different is cool. Being different is really it's the human condition. And being vulnerable enough to realize that, hey, like, those differences aren't bad. Like, they just are what they are. Like, then that's that's a really cool accomplishment for someone to realize that.
Talk to us about self-imposed excuses.
Well, yeah, I think our language structures a lot of our world and our reality. Your perceptions are based very much like in your language and rooted in your language. So the words that you use in conversation, the words that you use to yourself in self-talk, like those things are within your control. So all the self-imposed excuses of, you know, pushing off, you know, rationalizations, justifications, you know, excuse-making stuff, avoiding responsibility, all those things are, you know, they're just self-imposed stuff. So it's just starts with trying to change language and take responsibility. Stop making justifications. Stop making, you know, reasons. If you don't want to go and work out, acknowledge that, hey, I don't want to go and work out, instead of saying like I'm too busy, you know, I don't have enough time, all that stuff. That's a lie. There's a lie that you're telling yourself. You'd be much better off by saying, you know what, I don't feel like it tonight, but maybe I will tomorrow.
You're 28 years old. Your best years are ahead of you. What dreams do you still have, Kyle Maynard?
Well, I'm very thankful that I am also very ADD. So I have dreams that are sporadic and all over the place and very broad and general. And I have dreams to sail around the world, go in to see the world from space. I have, you know, dreams to start businesses and help people and reach millions of kids. I have, you know, dreams to do a lot of different things and experience things. And also have dreams to, you know, just enjoy this moment, you know, and be able to be, you know, there and enjoy my family and start a family of my own someday and really just take it in. And anytime I can sit in the book, you know, beach and read a book, then that's a dream accomplished.
As our time winds down together this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
I say just dream big. You know, don't let other people tell you that you can't do something. And you know, even when they do, it's not about trying to prove them wrong. It's really just about, you know, continuing just to realize that, like, your life can mean something and matter to this world and make it a better place than you found it, if you desire. And it's not just the young listeners that are listening to this, because it's an excuse to say that anybody at any stage in life could not do that. So dream big and realize that you can be a world changer, too.
Kyle Maynard, you may have no arms and you may have no legs, but you do have the heart of a champion. And the world's better for it. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, my friend.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.
Believe in yourself.